Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, September 1st, 2020. We'll begin with the headline article, 146 New Cases in McLean County, 3 New Deaths in LaSalle County, by Paul Sweech. A total of 146 more McLean County residents have confirmed cases of COVID-19, the County Health Department said Monday, one day after reporting a single-day record high of 219 cases. The surge reflects, in part, the continuing increase in cases at Illinois State University. I state the obvious when I say the number of positive COVID-19 test results received through on-campus testing is concerning, ISU President Larry Dietz said in a statement. The virus, meanwhile, claimed 3 more lives in LaSalle County and another life in Tazewell County. ISU reported on Monday 39 new cases on Sunday, with 84 people testing negative. In the previous 7 days, 699 people have tested positive on campus, of 2,909 people tested, for a positivity rate of 24%. ISU's totals as of Monday morning were 972 people testing positive and 3,433 testing negative. While ISU COVID results are included in the McLean County totals, they are not necessarily reflected on the same day. The university's daily reports reflect information from the previous day from Roditis Laboratories, which performs the on-campus testing. The county numbers come from the Illinois Department of Public Health and include results from tests performed at multiple locations. Dietz released a statement during the weekend assuring the university community that ISU leaders are closely monitoring the number of positive cases reported through on-campus and community testing sites. Dietz said ISU is working with the Town of Normal and McLean County Health Department to control the spread of the virus. The university made many decisions throughout the summer months to de-densify the number of students, faculty, and staff who are on campus, Dietz said. Many faculty and staff continue to work remotely. Nearly 80% of classes are being taught virtually, and 40% fewer students are living on campus, he said. We continue to work closely with students who prefer to live at home rather than on campus housing. In addition, many of our students are currently living in the community in off-campus housing and sign leases for this fall in September or October of 2019 prior to COVID-19. The university is not a party to leases that students sign and regrettably has no control over off-campus housing agreements. I urge students, faculty, and staff to follow all public health guidelines while on campus and in the community, Dietz said. McLean County's 146 new COVID cases brings the county's total since March 19th to 1,767 people diagnosed with the virus, McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight said. The age group with the largest number of cases in McLean County is people in their 20s. Of the 1,767 people, 840 are isolating at home, 4 are hospitalized, 1 in the ICU, and 907 have recovered, McKnight said. 16 McLean County residents have died of COVID. The most recent death was reported on August 17th. The county's positivity rate, percentage of COVID tests that have come back positive for the 7-day period ending Sunday, was 10.3%, McKnight said. The county's cumulative positivity rate of the 45,900 tests conducted since testing began in March is 3.8%, she said. At the COVID-19 testing site operated by Roditis at the McLean County Fairgrounds at 1106 Interstate Drive in Bloomington, 719 people were tested on Sunday, the busiest Sunday since that site opened in March 28th in McLean County Emergency EMA reported Monday. The site is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily. For testing at that site, a new online pre-registration form may help the process go faster, EMA said. On-site staff can assist people who encounter problems or who are unable to register online. The link for the site is the words test directly, no space, no capitals, .com/McLean. LaSalle County Health Department announced COVID-related deaths of a man in his 80s, a woman in her 80s, and a woman in her 90s, bringing to 48 the number of COVID deaths in that county. LaSalle County also announced 17 new COVID cases, bringing its total to 1,261. Of those, 683 have recovered. Tazewell County Health Department said a woman in her 80s died of COVID, increasing the number of Tazewell County deaths to 10. Livingston County Health Department announced 12 new cases, bringing its total to 193. All 12 are in isolation. Of the 193 people, 156 have recovered. Logan County Health Department announced 6 new cases, bringing its total to 263, of which 226 have recovered. Statewide, IDPH on Monday announced 1,668 new COVID cases and 7 additional deaths. None of the deaths were in Central Illinois. Since the outbreak began earlier this year, 235,023 people in Illinois have had COVID, and 8,026 have died, IDPH said. The statewide positivity rate for cases as a percent of tests for the 7 days ending on Sunday was 4.1%. As of Sunday night, 1,492 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID, and 347 were in intensive care units. McKnight said, stay home if you're sick. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, especially after you've been in a public place. Avoid close contact with people who are sick, cover coughs and sneezes, clean and disinfect frequently touched surfaces, including tables, doorknobs, light switches, handles, keyboards, faucets, and sinks, and wear a face covering when you are unable to maintain social distance in public around people outside of your household, McKnight said. In an aside on this article, there's a note about more testing sites. In addition to COVID-19 testing sites in McLean County, sites are also available or will be soon in Logan and Livingston counties. Logan County Department of Public Health conducts free drive-through testing for anyone from 9 to 11 a.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays at the Logan County Fairgrounds in Lincoln. Reservations are not required. Livingston County Health Department and OSF Healthcare St. James and John W. Albrecht Medical Center will be offering free drive-through testing 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on weekdays beginning September 8th in the St. James parking lot on Pontiac. Appointments are recommended at 815-844-7174, extension 210. The next article is entitled The New Business Cycle, How Normal Bars and Restaurants Face New Seating Rules by Sierra Henry. Peter Connolly, co-owner of the Irish pub Maggie Miley's, temporarily shut down July 30th and August 23rd after employees tested positive for COVID. It's a vicious cycle that Connolly and other business owners are deeply worried about as COVID continues to cause cases. We're all trying to keep the doors open and pay bills and everything else, he said. The rent doesn't go down even if you're only closed for 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 weeks. Now there are new hurdles on the horizon. Normal Mayor Chris Koos issued 2 emergency orders on Friday that limit social gatherings to 10 people or fewer and require patrons to be seated to be served in restaurants and bars. Both are meant to curb a stubborn increase in cases recently, coinciding with the return of Illinois State University students. The Normal Town Council is set to consider extending both orders to January 1st during a special meeting on Wednesday. Under the new rules, customers are only permitted to stand in restaurants and bars when using the restroom, placing an order at the designated service area, or picking up an order for carryout. No more than two patrons may stand when playing arcade games, dartboards, pool tables, or similar games or entertainment devices at any time. Liquor licensees are responsible for enforcing the rules and for posting requirements for seating and face coverings at all entrances. Customers who don't comply could face fines of up to $750 per violation. While many establishments are voluntarily closing as a precaution when staff tests positive for COVID-19, Connolly worries how many times businesses can temporarily close and reopen before it starts taking a toll. You're seeing dozens of places closing down, and this is not a sustainable method of operation, said Luke Rokos, manager of Pub 2 at 102 North Linden Street, which also closed because of a positive case. Mayor Terry Renner said no plans are in place for similar restrictions in Bloomington. I made it clear we would revoke their liquor licenses if there were issues and they weren't following social distancing, Renner said. The Bloomington police have reported it has not been perfect, but most of these practices have been ceased. Bar and restaurant owners were told by city officials in a video statement 2 weeks ago that they could potentially be fined or have their liquor license revoked or suspended if they did not follow state guidelines. Renner told the Pantograph on Monday that no liquor licenses have been revoked or suspended and no fines have been issued. Under Illinois rules, the state can put additional local restrictions in place if COVID levels increase. As of Monday, McLean County had one warning level for new cases. Between August 16th and 22nd, the county reported 179 cases per 100,000 population. The target is less than 50 per 100,000. Rokos, Connolly, and Greg Rose, owner of Stave Wine Bar and Market at 111 West North Street, said they support the normal rule but say that their businesses were already taking the precautions, such as requiring customers to be seated and social distancing. We're about protecting our staff, our customers, and our community, Rose said. We'll support emergency orders within reason that move us in a direction to help benefit the community. Rocco said the key to ensuring success is gaining compliance from patrons as well. That means having customers wear masks when indoors and when interacting with restaurant staff. The customers will have to be willing to follow the guidelines, Rokos said. Coos spoke with mayors of communities with large universities to draft the new orders, which he said are a combination of what those communities have enacted. Coos said the town will continue encouraging people to follow the new guidelines, but that it's really up to the individuals to be aware of their environment and their surroundings. I think as these numbers climb, the younger population is realizing that they're not immune and they're not by virtue of their age given more protection than other people, he said. In addition to limiting social gatherings on private property, the town issued requirements for face coverings, social distancing, and limits on multiple parties in common areas or parking lots. Gatherings in violation of the ordinance requirements will be deemed a nuisance party with hosts and guests subject to fines of up to $750. Over the weekend, the Normal Police Department received several complaints of parties, but were ultimately able to gain voluntary compliance. Police Chief Rick Bleichner said officers' main goal when responding to complaints of parties or social gatherings is to seek compliance first. Our goal is to educate. We don't want to jump right to fines, he said. Illinois State Police Chief Aaron Woodruff said he did not hear any complaints about on- or off-campus parties over the weekend. Students living in the residence halls are complying with face coverings as well. As far as right now, I'm glad the first weekend went well, said Woodruff. I'm hopeful students remain vigilant and comply. Continuing on the first page and on the subject of COVID, we have experts. Summer could give way to bleak fall. This is an Associated Press article by Carla K. Johnson. As the summer of COVID draws to a close, many experts fear an even bleaker fall and suggest that American families should start planning for Thanksgiving by Zoom. Because of the many uncertainties, public health scientists say it's easier to forecast the weather on Thanksgiving Day than to predict how the United States coronavirus crisis will play out this autumn. But school reopenings, holiday travel, and more indoor activity because of colder weather could all separately increase transmission of the virus and combine in ways that would multiply the threat, they say. Here's one way it could go. As more schools open for in-person instruction and more college students return to campuses, small clusters of cases could widen into outbreaks in late September. Public fatigue over mask rules and other restrictions could stymie efforts to slow these infections. A few weeks later, widening outbreaks could start to strain hospitals. If a bad flu season peaks in October, as happened in 2009, the pressure on the healthcare system could result in higher daily death tolls from the coronavirus. Dr. Robert Redfield, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has said that scenario is his biggest fear. Also on Monday, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the federal government's top infectious disease expert, predicted that Labor Day weekend will be key in determining whether the U.S. gets a running start at containing the coronavirus this fall. Fauci said he has a great deal of faith in the American people to wash their hands, practice social distancing, wear masks, avoid crowds, and congregate outside during the weekend celebrations. He said it's important to avoid a surge in cases like those seen after the Memorial Day and July 4th holidays. He made the comments on a White House conference call with governors, the audio of which was obtained by the Associated Press. One certainty is that the virus will still be around to some degree during the holidays, said Gerard Nimi, a disease modeling expert at Iowa State University. We will not have a vaccine yet, and we will not have enough infected individuals for herd immunity to be helpful, Nimi said. Fall may feel like a roller coaster of stop and start restrictions as communities react to climbing hospital cases, said University of Texas disease modeler Lauren Ansel Myers. Everyone should get a flu shot, she said, because if the flu spreads widely, hospitals will begin to buckle and that will compound the threat of COVID. The decisions we make today will fundamentally impact the safety and feasibility of what we can do next month and by Thanksgiving, Myers said. The virus is blamed for over 180,000 deaths and 6 million confirmed infections in the United States. Worldwide, the death toll is put at almost 850,000, with over 25 million cases. The U.S. is recording, on average, about 900 deaths a day from COVID-19, and newly confirmed infections per day are running at about 42,000, down from their peak in mid-July, when cases were topping out at over 70,000 a day. Around the country, a chicken processing plant in California will close this week for deep cleaning after nearly 400 workers got sick, including 8 who died. And college campuses have been hit by outbreaks involving hundreds of students, blamed in some cases on too much partying. Schools, including the University of North Carolina, Michigan State, and Notre Dame, have moved instruction online because of clusters on their campuses. Several vaccines are in advanced testing, and researchers hope to have the results later this year. But even if a vaccine is declared safe and effective by year's end, as some expect, there won't be enough for everyone who wants it right away. Several companies are developing rapid at-home tests, which conceivably could be used by families before a Thanksgiving gathering, but none has yet won approval. More than 90 million adults are over 65 or have health problems, putting them in higher danger of severe consequences if they get sick with the coronavirus. Many of them and their families are starting to decide whether to book holiday flights. Casey Docking, 44, an urgent care nurse in Seattle, is telling her parents, both cancer survivors, that Thanksgiving will be FaceTime only. We all want to get to 2021, she said, and if that's what it takes, that's what we'll do. Caitlin Joyce's family is forging ahead with a holiday feast. They plan to set up plywood tables on sawhorses in a large garage so they can all sit 6 feet apart. Turning now to local and state news, we have 3 IWU faculty members terminated. Raleigh cites crisis in the humanities. This is by Lenore Sabota. More than 60 people gathered on the Illinois Wesleyan University quad on Monday to lament the crisis in the humanities on the same day 1-year terminal contracts were given to 3 faculty members whose programs or majors are being eliminated. Terminal contracts were originally planned to be issued August 1st, but the university delayed them for a month to see whether more alternatives would come to light after classes began August 17th. Originally, 9 faculty members potentially were impacted by the board's decision to discontinue programs in French, Italian, religious studies, and anthropology. President Georgia Nugent said through many discussions, they were able to work out mutually acceptable resolutions with some faculty members moving to tenured positions in other departments and others retiring or taking a phased retirement. She said the university will continue working with the 3 affected faculty members to make every effort to reach a satisfactory resolution. Referring to a crisis in the humanities reflected in program cuts nationwide, English professor Michael Thune said, "It turns out that the crisis, which has already affected our university to a significant degree, including recently the closure of Greek and Roman studies, has now fully arrived." Thune, advisor for the first-year humanities fellows, called it a dark and dismal day, but added, "We are keeping watch." Among those keeping watch is the American Association of University Professors, which questioned IWU's actions in a letter to Nugent and Board of Trustees Chair Tim Zerlong. The letter from Gregory Schultz, director of AAUP's Department of Academic Freedom, Tenure and Governance, said, "Unless there is an appropriate resolution or other information, the evident serious departures from association recommended principles and standards could result in a recommendation for a formal AAUP investigation." Nugent said the university will be providing a formal response to the AAUP with additional information about IWU's actions. The AAUP letter was based only on information from faculty sources. Students speaking at the Heeding the Humanities event expressed concern about what they think will be lost by the elimination of the programs. Senior Taylor Planton of Rolling Meadows, an English literature major, said, "For the past 6 months of this tumultuous year, I have been fortunate to lean on the knowledge I have gained throughout my humanities coursework during my time at Illinois Wesleyan." She said, "With the closure of these programs, our breakthrough moments simply and suddenly become, good enough moments," adding that good enough is not acceptable. Samira Kassem, a senior in political science from Mahomet, said, "With threats from COVID-19, racism, fascism, and environmental concerns," Kassem said, "we need the humanities now more than ever." She expressed fear that without the humanities, IWU would become a stale, overpriced trade school training corporate zombies. But Nugent said, "I do not agree that there is a turn away from the humanities here. Although the programs have been eliminated, we intend to continue offering those kinds of courses at the introductory level," she said. Nugent said, "If trustees had accepted the original recommendation of the Program Evaluation Task Force, the School of Music and School of Art would have been eliminated. Instead, we're committed to developing and improving and enhancing both schools." Kevin Barlow writes this article, "NAACP Chapter Outraged by Violence. Leaders of the Bloomington Normal branch of the NAACP say they are outraged by the recent violence seen throughout the nation since the shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin on August 23rd. Quote, America can no longer afford to ignore the reality of its historic and current pattern of racism and discrimination, said Linda Foster, president of the local branch, in a statement released Monday morning. The country must face this issue head on and no longer afford to deny the oppression suffered by African Americans and other minority group members. Blake, 29, who is black, was shot by a Kenosha police officer while responding to a call about a domestic dispute on August 23rd. He remains in a Kenosha hospital after suffering 7 gunshots to the back. The images touched off nights of violence and arson, and authorities say a 17-year-old from Northern Illinois shot and killed 2 protesters. Kenosha police said Sunday that they had arrested 175 people. President Donald Trump is expected to visit the city, which is about halfway between Chicago and Milwaukee, to tour damage and meet with law enforcement on Tuesday. Obviously, the NAACP rejects all forms of violence, said First Vice President Carla Campbell Jackson. Ignoring the racial divide in our country does not stymie hatred, racism, and discrimination. It only offers a temporary band-aid to a problem steeped in permanence. The time is now to courageously and forthrightly contend with the ills that have long plagued our country. There have been no reports of violence in McLean County as a result of protests from the Blake incident. Foster said that Blake's children were her concern. As we witness Mr. Blake's incident, one can only imagine the devastation encountered by the children in the back seat of the vehicle, she said. Furthermore, the bullets could have easily struck one of the innocent children. We must cease the senseless violence against African Americans, eliminate the double standard of justice, and hold all entities completely accountable. The local chapter of the NAACP recently presented a 10-page strategic action plan to address racial disparities associated with law enforcement, education, health, businesses, and climate justice. Local leaders plan to meet with the community and business leaders to promote racial harmony in McLean County. Next, we have Corn Belt Energy Sends Crews to Louisiana by Paul Sweech. Bloomington-based Corn Belt Energy has sent crews to Louisiana to assist with power restoration following Hurricane Laura. The Midwest Food Bank in Bloomington Normal Division also sent on Saturday a semi-trailer load of cleanup kits, paper towels, and drinks to Louisiana in cooperation with partnering organization Somebody Cares. That load arrived in Louisiana on Sunday, Executive Director Tara Ingham said. In addition, family food boxes are being prepared at Midwest Food Bank locations in Normal, Morton, and Peoria. The Corn Belt crews left Friday and Saturday to assist Jeff Davis Electric Cooperative in Jennings, Louisiana. Hurricane Laura caused 18 deaths and damage and power outages to hundreds of thousands of people as it ripped through portions of Louisiana and eastern Texas. Jeff Davis Electric Cooperative reported that its entire electric system is without power because of the extensive storm damage, including down lines, damaged poles, and severe flooding. The co-op requested assistance from Corn Belt and others, and 11 co-ops in Illinois have responded. This will conclude the first part of the Pantograph reading for Tuesday, September 1st, 2020. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with part 2.